Hi, Steve Cooper, Rank Success, and welcome to another Rank Success podcast. And in this particular episode, I'm going to be talking about leadership, leadership training, the College of Policing, and some of the issues that are current, if you like, in the zeitgeist of policing. And as always, to help facilitate that conversation, I have here my colleague, friend Adrian. So, hi, Adrian.
Hi, Steve.
Okay, where would you like to start this particular conversation for listeners?
Well, I thought it'd be good to start pretty general and talk about training generally for leaders. And I wondered if you thought, do supervisors and sergeants get enough meaningful training to do their job once they are promoted?
Okay, well, that's a good question to start with, because I suppose in one sense the answer to that is it depends. It depends which era of policing you're in. It depends what level of leadership you want to aspire to or go to. It depends on the energy, drive, enthusiasm, motivation and determination that you have as an individual. But coming back to, do supervisors and do leaders get enough when they get promoted? Or do they get enough at certain levels? I'd probably say that if you look for current themes, it's reflected across organisations, across different police forces, and through history, that actually maybe the balance is not, that they don't get enough training. So one of the articles I remember reading a while back was by Edward Verder, who was the chief of police in America, who said, and I always remember this line, you know, newly promoted sergeants need 80 hours of management training on promotion. Well, some people immediately kind of dilute and dissipate that by saying, well, that's Edward Verder's view. That's a long time ago, Steve. Things have changed, Steve. But that principle, that standard hasn't. And I think we're seeing many chickens coming home to roost as a result of not managing standards effectively, and not providing training in a timely fashion, and not providing the right training at the right time for people in at the time of their career. So when you want people to perform a leadership role, it's only right that the organisation supports that. But it's also right that there's a drive from the other side of the coin by the individual concerned to kind of help meet in the middle. And I don't think either of those things have always been there together.
I'm aware of some forces now, they're doing what's called a first line leadership course, recognising that gap and formalising it in some way, but that can be a bit sporadic.
Yeah, and I think different forces have different levels of standards and leadership activity training and programmes and a mixture of online and classroom based. But because, you know, if you kind of zoom out back to the fact you've got 43 forces, 43 different command teams, 43 different chief constables, 43 leadership training development departments, 43 different ways of doing it. Yes, there may be some common threads in between all that, but it's their leaders that are caught in that effectiveness or inefficiency of approach. So, you know, I know it's not the military, but when you join the military, you are inducted into standards immediately. And I remember my induction training as a former Royal Marine. You're shown how to behave to the standards required. You are inducted into the organisation at the level you join. You then go through junior and senior leadership command courses that you have no doubt what the standards are. And then if you've also got the culture, the camaraderie, the ethos there to blend in with that as well, that all helps towards culture. It also helps towards standards of leadership and recognition of those standards by the people being led, i.e. the followers. And that's often an underestimated, untalked about aspect of leadership. You can't really have leadership without followers. And so understanding leadership and what it is you want to get from it is just as important as what organisations are providing, so that within the policing context, the public are able to get the best service possible from people who are leading at the appropriate level in the organisation.
Coming back to the training point, you offer what you call masterclasses on promotion. Is that just there to help people pass their promotion board, or is it there to provide leadership skills as well to police officers?
That's a good question, because yes, it does help people to pass their promotion boards, and there's a track record there that anybody can go and have a look at ranksuccess.co.uk and see people have got promoted to sergeant inspector, chief inspector again and again and again. So I like to think that some of the aspects of that course, and I'm always thinking about to keep it current, relevant and topical. But just coming back from that, I think it's more about CPD, continuous professional and personal development for individuals at whatever level they're expected to lead at. So that's a slightly different take on it, because leadership is delivered. It's a bit of a cliche. Leadership is delivered at all levels within policing. Well, of course it is. But if you're going for a formal leadership position, the sergeant, so team leader, inspector, leader of teams, and then more where you move across that what I call crossing the Rubicon, your inner facing, outer facing, chief inspector, pivot role, and more strategic aspects of your leadership. I think it just helps align people to some of those concepts. So I try and make sure that whatever the processes are that are current in the zeitgeist of promotion selection processes, that officers are as best equipped they can to turn up and give the best version of themselves in terms of realising the potential that they have as leaders. And it's an interesting point, really, because, you know, not all forces assess people at the levels that the College of Policing say they should. So, you know, without going down a rabbit hole, some forces assess aspiring sergeants at level one of the CPF, which is practitioner level. And I remember sitting up, you know, getting up with a cup of coffee, thinking, whoa, hang on a minute, this force are assessing aspiring sergeants at level one of the CPF. Hang on, let's do a bit of a deep dive into that. So I had a look at it, and why not? Why not? Why are you assessing people at the level of a sergeant at CVF level 2, the competency and values framework, which is what's used to assess aspiring leaders and for recruitment and selection, and it's a values-based process, if you like, framework. I looked at that and I thought, well, that's interesting. And then when I did a deeper dive into that, I realised that, you know, it doesn't always do what it says on the can. And actually, there is a dose of realism there by some forces, where they look at people and go, actually, it's unfair to hold that individual through this selection process to that level of the CVF because they're unable to evidence it. And that's a theme as well within some of the selection processes for leaders. So if you look at the fast track, for instance, you know, you've got constables being assessed at CVF level 3, which is executive, but they're not being assessed on the, you know, the detail of their evidence. They're being assessed on their potential for understanding some of the issues around that, so more strategic right. aspects and perspectives. So to come back to my courses and what I offer, I try and lay out for them the areas which they should be aware of to raise their awareness, build their confidence, to become better leaders. And as a result of that, yes, it converts through in selection processes, which is their reason for attending. But some forces have sent their individuals onto my promotion masterclasses, not to get through a process, but to start looking at some of these concepts so that they can make those links for themselves and, you know, if you like, improve as leaders.
Just to make it maybe a bit more tangible, what kind of, can you give an example of some sort of CPD that someone might find on your promotion masterclass that will help them become better leaders? What's an example of something you might encounter there?
Well, I've written some pretty meaty blogs, one in particular about the importance of CPD, which is called The Killer Question. And that's around being aware of the importance of CPD for promotion selection processes, not only because it's the College of Policing's number one recommendation, if you like, in their leadership review a few years ago, where they used a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of resources to come up with their recommendations, number one of which was that every aspiring leader or existing leader, I can't remember the exact wording, takes responsibility for driving their own continuous personal professional development. So that's where that comes from. And I find that many aspiring leaders that go for formal leadership positions are not attuned to that fact still, even after all this time. They don't have a CPD plan. If they do, it's not tangible. It doesn't exist. It only exists in their head or as a conversation that they last had with their supervisor and perhaps a couple of bullet points. which is okay if it's actually, you know, something you're focused on, but a meaningful, bespoke, tailored kind of plan for you that measures, you know, where you want to be to, what your goals are, how you're achieving organizational aims and objectives, but also how you are realizing your own dreams and hopes and aspirations in the organization is the intangible stuff, I find, that doesn't exist. So people are, if you like, they become very quickly aware of the importance of CPD. So what I mean by that is on the masterclasses, I'll ask people what they're reading, and people are very honest. I encourage that. And, you know, some people will say, I ain't got time to read, mate. Really? Have I got time to read as a Bobby today? And I get that. I completely get that as well. But then also it's about switching to the other side of the coin and saying, okay, well, who are you reading for if you're not reading? If you're not, how are you improving on a daily basis or a monthly basis or a yearly basis? Because all leaders never stand still. They're always learning and they're always thinking about how they can support their teams, manage their work, lead their teams. And so to come back to the CPD issue, really, it's never far away. It's never far away from where any leader is. It's just that conscious commitment, certainly for constables, perhaps going for sergeant, to understand how important it is not just to develop themselves. That's just taken for granted. It's the number one leadership review recommendation. It's more the other side of it. If you're becoming a leader, well, that's just taken for granted that you're developing yourself every day. It's about the understanding how important it is for you to be developing other people. So that killer question in that blog that I've written really centres you in on that. And it's one of the things that I cover as part of the CPD content of the courses.
So just sorry to put you on the spot, but like, so that covers the general angle of CPD and the fact that going on the course, the masterclass itself would be a tick in the box of a CPD plan that you're alluded to. But I wonder if you could give an example of something, some kind of development, leadership development subject matter that someone might encounter on your course.
Well, I suppose one of the issues is emotional awareness. That's a biggie. That's a real massive subject in policing at the moment.
Okay.
And often people are unaware of that when in fact it's a competence. A competency in the competency and values framework. It's badged or labelled, you know, we are emotionally aware. Well, you either are or you're not. It's a really important part of your own development in terms of your awareness, certainly in terms of managing your own emotions, managing a team, your levels of self-awareness, your degree of empathy, your ability to build trust and relationships. So that one competency alone, Not only do I encourage people to think about and hit what I call the pause button, really slow time down and afford yourself the ability to reflect and think back. When have you had to really kind of bite your tongue? When have you decided to, you know, live again to fight another day? When have you become aware of something in policing that you hadn't been aware of before because you stopped to listen? Or where have you helped a friend or a colleague and thought about them and not about yourself? So this is what I call a deep dive into emotional awareness. And anybody anywhere can go and read Daniel Goleman, who's the guru, the authority on emotional awareness. In fact, in my blogs, in my courses, I always connect to his materials, his thoughts, his blogs, if you like, on emotional awareness, because it's such a big topic. And the argument or the ethos is the higher you go up the organization, you know, the more emotional awareness is important, because certainly as you go on through the ranks, it's not about you anymore. It's not about the technical skills or abilities that you have at sergeant or inspector level. It's more about your ability to win trust and confidence, to negotiate and influence with people, and to build relationships through difficult times, through difficult relationships, lack of resources, perhaps into organizational conflict. How are you still maintaining those conversations? How are you still being able to pick the phone up to each other as senior leaders in an organization and have those conversations with each other? And then bringing that right back down to team leadership as a sergeant, you know, what does emotional awareness mean to you? How do you demonstrate it in the workplace? Give us an example of when that last happened. If we were to promote you tomorrow, how will you persuade us now that you will be an emotionally intelligent leader. It really does work to connect you with that. So that's just one aspect. That's one tangible example.
Yeah, that's a really good example.
To link it to an important current and what I would call future-proofed competency that you will grow as a leader with as your ability and your depth of emotional awareness grows. And some people just haven't got it. And part of the learning is, you know, I haven't got any emotional intelligence. I've got very low levels of it. And that's okay as well. Not everybody can have it, but don't try and expect that you will advance through an organization if your aspiration, your career trajectory is to get to senior leadership positions. That's not to say it's not impossible, because there's also a school of thought that says many people that rise to the top of organizations are sociopaths, oblique psychopaths, or I'll be careful what I say there, demonstrate many of those similar traits or behaviors.
Like John
Lawson's
the psychopath test is one example of that's a really good
book. Yeah, and I think I've alluded to that. Yeah, I think I've alluded to that in one of the blogs, I think, around the psychopath test, if you like. I think it's a TED talk. So if you Google or if you research, TED talk,
yeah, it's an 18-minute John Lawson TED talk is one of my favorites. It's quite.
And he alludes to psychopaths being everywhere you look, which is an interesting observation, an interesting book, and well worth listening to.
Yeah, I like that. The emotional intelligence is an important one because that's a general skill that all leaders should and can develop today in all industries, but it so happens to be aligned to one of the main CDF competencies as well. We are emotionally aware, so it's quite easy to see how that on your course, if you're talking about that and developing people and helping develop their skill set around emotional intelligence, that will have success at a promotion board where emotional intelligence, emotionally aware, is asked about as a byproduct.
Yeah, so understanding it, having done some work, having done some research on it, and then spending some time to reflect, which is a characteristic of emotional awareness, on yourself and understanding, you know, your gaps around developing yourself with that competency. Because it's perfectly okay to say, look, I've recognised through reflection that I don't have high degrees of emotional awareness. I recognise I need to commit to developing that, and I'm currently researching ways in which I can do that.
So that kind of, the whole subject of emotional awareness in a way connects back to those individuals, as you say, the killer question, taking ownership of their own gaps, their own self-awareness of where they need to develop, in terms of their training as a supervisor and as a newly promoted police leader.
Yeah, and I think there's a quote I've used in one of my blogs by Peter Drucker, as a management guru, who just says that all development is self-development. It's ridiculous to expect an organisation to provide self-development activity for you as a aspiring leader. So,
okay. Continuing on the development topic then, I noticed the Police Federation in their latest magazine had an article on page 50 in the August issue, about the College of Policing making a commitment to reforming leadership at all levels, and that involves, it seems, some new training and standards for leadership. How do you think that one's going to pan out? What are your views on that?
Well, that's interesting. I know the article you're talking about is we talked about it a while back. And it's interesting because, you know, I mean, I can swing like a pendulum between this. Leadership is a vast topic. It is a vast topic. So, you know, decision making is a vast topic, and I cover both of those on my masterclasses. And I suppose I should mention the next masterclass is on Saturday, the 30th of September 2023, at the National Motorcycle Museum, which is near Birmingham, just outside Birmingham. There's still a couple of places on there if you'd like to attend. And, you know, one of the points I make there is that leadership is a vast topic. A lot of aspiring leaders are not comfortable talking about themselves in the context of leading at whatever level they're going for. So that's one of the areas in which I support and encourage and signpost and direct people to resources about how they can do that better. Because it's not natural to sit there and talk about yourself in a leadership capacity unless you're comfortable with that. And some people are far more comfortable than others. So it's just about getting that degree of personal confidence to articulate the leadership aspirations you have, what it is you want for your team, the kind of environment you want for your team, how you're going to lead yourself, how you're going to keep yourself improving. Ultimately, how will you be fit for purpose and match fit to be delivering as a leader at the level that you aspire to, or at the level you're currently at, or the level you're currently developing yourself in, or being developed by the organisation. So leadership's a massive subject. I always kind of think people leave out the management side of that. So one of the ways in which I try and clarify and simplify issues for people is to think about issues as one coin, and sometimes things are naturally on, you know, one side of the coin to another. So what I mean by that is leadership on one side of the coin, management on the other. And, you know, you may think, some people think that sergeants are managers. You know, you need your sergeants, if you're an inspector or chief inspector, you need your sergeants, because you're managing them as resources, supporting and leading them as resources. First and foremost, some people argue, as effective managers. You need them there to do things right. And it's a cliche that, you know, managers do things right, leaders do the right things. But I think that makes the point quite well for me, with two sides of the coin. And effectively, where are you leading at? What level? So leading as a sergeant, you know, you are managing yourself. You are managing your work. You are managing your team. That's very clear. And that's enough. That's enough.
And managing the tasks, if you extend absolutely, it to that John Deere model.
Absolutely, yeah. So managing yourself as an individual, managing the task, managing the team. So John Adair's leadership model, which has served the military well for a long, long time, and, you know, a lot of other aspiring leaders as well. So having an understanding of some of those models is important. But coming back to the kind of coin side of it, managing is what I think is important, is what people want from team leaders, is the ability, first and foremost, I think, to probably manage better. You then grow as a leader through that activity in managing your team. And if you're managing their well-being, and if you're managing briefings well and delivering those, you are effectively delivering, supporting and inspiring people.
Yeah, which lots is of a people good link. Get caught up on the cliches and our leader should be inspirational and the leader should be some people follow. And but those are very, and there's a lot of cliches about the leadership style at the moment. Everyone's jumping on that bandwagon, it seems, in terms of all trying to, in their own way, explain what leadership looks like. What seems to be, I can understand your point, what seems to be forgotten a lot of the time is just basic good management. That could almost be a style in itself, just getting the basics right and doing things right. And of course, that's going to inspire your team in a way that they'll just have confidence that you're, they don't have to worry about you and they can get on with the job.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting how those concepts with team management and leadership do overlap and link, interlink, if you like, or to use a management buzzword bingo phrase, you know, overarch.
Or the dovetail, yeah, popular one.
How they actually all kind of join together. But if you look at sergeants, or if you're an aspiring sergeant now, if you're a constable looking at aspiring sergeant, there's an emphasis there around expectations that you are a good manager. First and foremost, so what do I mean by linking to perhaps the investigative process? Do you understand the investigative process? I know you're allocating work all the time. And yeah, as an inspector, you're allocating work, but monitoring the progress and the quality of it. There's a slight difference between the two. But you can do both of those as managers. But I think, you know, tell me, convince me, persuade me that you understand the investigative process first. What does that mean? Well, it means, yes, you were there at the point of instigation. Do you also understand about initial investigation? Yes, you do. What about investigative evaluation, which is the first decision point in the process at which you can really make the difference, you know, between investing further resources in that investigation or not, and applying that standard to it, before you then go through all the way through to, on the old process, I know the new process has been reviewed, but certainly through to court, and certainly for serious crimes, you want to be looking at convictions and courts. So do you understand all the other phases, and do you take responsibility, and do you understand each of those component parts of the process Are they interlinked? Do you understand the links to your force performance around that? And do you understand what you're doing on a daily basis? And then as a team leader, how do you communicate to your teams the importance of their work and how that's contributing to that? And that's all good. And out of that comes the kind of green shoots, if you like, of leadership from sergeant, as you then move on through the ranks to inspector and chief inspector, because you've been a good manager first. And certainly that's one view around it. Yeah. And it's one of the things that I often try and encourage sergeants to think about when they're sat in front of a promotion board, is understanding that and trying to convey that to a board. Look, I understand, first and foremost, that I'm expected to do the right things. But I hope doing that to also be able to learn and to grow and to develop as a leader, to understand some of the leadership competencies and the leadership aspects, where my team look to me first and foremost as someone who's visible, approachable, emotionally aware. So that's where we start bringing in those competencies into conversations that you can share with the board, where they make that connection and you go, you know, this individual really does get it, not only in terms of their own self-awareness. But coming back to
you come back to that.
I was going to come back to the article you mentioned earlier.
I can see, just reflecting back on what you said there about how the masterclass that you mentioned on the 30th and that kind of support, or it might be looked at as just being applicable to those that are going for promotion, but actually I can see how that's clearly useful, understanding those things to a newly promoted, possibly not so confident, new sergeant or inspector, to then know that once they are promoted and in their 12-month probation or even beyond that, that they're actually getting those things right and understanding what it takes to be a good leader to help them in that role.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the masterclass, I provide bespoke material, bespoke handouts, I explain things, I clarify things to them, I signpost, direct and guide people to resources. But you're quite right, some people have come on the class before having perhaps failed in a couple of sergeant's boards, and some have come along after four or five failures. They just wonder, what is it I'm not doing, or what is it I could do better?
Because it's not just a straightforward black and white answer like the exam.
No, absolutely. And they've gone away afterwards, and the feedback has been, I mean, you probably see it in some of the testimonials. Look, the penny dropped. It all clicked. It all came together. They know parts. It's a bit like a jigsaw. It's a bit like saying, well, look, here's a 500-piece jigsaw. I've got 350 pieces of it in place. I just cannot find those other pieces. Yeah. And it's about helping people to put together those pieces in blending in with their own experience and accumulated expertise as an officer. And every cop's got experience, but every cop has also got knowledge gaps. And it's those knowledge gaps that I try and, you know, fill with, or help them fill and find those missing jigsaw pieces, so that it all joins up in a way that's meaningful for them, so they see their own jigsaw picture. And that's where their own personal individual essence, if you like, comes through, so that you can convince and persuade and influence a board. Actually, yeah, you're not only just saying these things, which is a criticism of many promotion candidates, they sit in front of a board and they say things, rather than actually engaging with conviction proactively, verbally, who they are, their own thoughts, what they know about the role, what they know about the challenges of policing, facing board, what they will do when they're promoted. Mm. And that's a completely different conversation. That's more confident, and it stems and comes from a base, a position of confidence, which is often the missing ingredient, I find.
Yeah, definitely. And it's often as well understanding those concepts for the more abstract emotional intelligence, emotional awareness, within which contains also what a lot of people struggle with, the diversity and inclusion aspects. When you can help people get to grips with that, they'll connect with it in a much more meaningful way, as you described there, when they're then in front of the board.
Absolutely, yeah. So there's lots of things and links, making links to yourself, your development, leadership issues, models, competencies, and things like that. You will, you know, pick up, if you like, as you go through. And then actually the important thing as well is after perhaps my course or my masterclass, or reading through one of my digital promotion toolkits, which is an alternative if you personally can't make a live event. And some people prefer, you know, to come along and listen and have some lunch and some coffee, tea, refreshments, a break, a Q&A session. It's a different dynamic to downloading a toolkit. But if you're someone who can't get to a masterclass for whatever reason, or if you've got an imminent process, then you can learn or pick up this information differently, if you like. And I'm always there then to kind of iron out any issues or particular queries or questions that people have. So I think the main point for me is when people come on the classes is they go away with a heightened awareness of who they are, their own gaps, what they need to do to close those gaps, and signposting, guidance, direction. And as some people have described, it's not my words, it's theirs, absolutely full of inspiration and motivation, just chomping at the bit to get on with the process. And I think that's the value that comes from that kind of approach. And it's probably what they want from their own forces, but for some reason, amongst forces, there are massively varying parameters of support that's available, and in terms of both quality and in terms of what's actually covered on those, that makes things meaningful for people. So,
okay. So I'm chomping at the bit to get on with what I was going to ask you about this article.
Okay.
One thing that surprised me, being in the Police Federation magazine, it kind of it almost looks like a press release by the College of Policing themselves about a new scheme. It's very positive about the leadership new scheme, even quoting some complimentary words by Home Secretary Suella Braverman. So I was kind of surprised by the tone of it. It's kind of, albeit quite late on in the Fed magazine. What did you think of the...
Oh, I haven't seen that. Hang on.
For example, the
first quote aid that's jumped to my mind. Now, I have read it, and I didn't see that. I wasn't aware of this Suella Braverman one. But the first one that's highlighted in the middle of this particular magazine is a quote by Andy Marsh, who is the college's chief constable. And the quote that's highlighted right in the middle is, "We can no longer afford to underinvest in the people we expect to lead." I just look at that. We can no longer afford to underinvest in the people we expect to lead. I don't know whether to comment on that or not. I think it says enough. But if it doesn't say enough for you, we can no longer afford to underinvest, which is kind of hinting that we have underinvested in the people we expect to lead, which comes back to your original question, your first one, which is, do you think people get enough training, leadership training, in policing? And, really, in the history of where the College of Policing is so far to date, since it was kind of appointed, if you like, or came into being as the tectonic plates of policing and shifted, if you like, to come up with a College of Policing as the head of profession, at providing all the things like the competency and values framework, the operational training, pulling together authorised professional practice. So lots of good things around that to bring it again and to kind of help shape policing to become match fit for the future. There's that recognition there that they can no longer afford to underinvest in training. So what is that actually saying? What is that actually saying? Is it saying some of the things I said earlier on that, no, there isn't enough training? Here it is almost being formally recognised. So over the last 5+ years, there's been an underinvestment in training. And guess what? Let's just hold the space and look at the zeitgeist of policing at the moment. It's very easy to do that from here where we are, sat down, away from the challenges and the threats and the harms of operational policing. I get all that. But we're sat here having a conversation around leadership in policing. And now it's recognised that everybody will get all the training they need. So it's a very... So I look at this now, I have read it before. I look at this now. The leadership training in policing will be reformed so that officers and staff in every rank and role are equipped with the skills and the knowledge to cut crime and to lock up criminals. I love that. I don't know whether Andy Marsh wrote that or not, or somebody else has written that. But that sounds really good as a starter for 10.
That's what I mean. It's got a vibe of it. It doesn't sound like a Police Federation critique of it in their own magazine. It sounds like it's just, I don't know, it read to me like a copy and paste press release from the college themselves. Maybe.
I don't know, because it's got, you know, consistent national standards for leadership are set out for the first time. They set out for the first time the knowledge, the skills and the behaviours that officers, staff and volunteers need to be effective leaders. So everyone's going to be an effective leader now. Well, not everybody can be an effective leader because they're not going to get that support in any meaningful sense. So it would not surprise me to read through here that at some stage that is going to be delivered through a variety of different mechanisms and processes and procedures, including, and probably a large chunk of that, online learning modules, online leadership modules. So I don't know, you know, there are rumours around, things changing, the zeitgeist of policing changing. So the rumours are changing that, there is a new process in place. I know that the Code of Ethics is currently, it's been out for consultation. It's going to come back out in a new revamped, and there's been plenty of publicity about that. So that will be coming out new, but it may also come out new with an aligned or revamped competency and values framework. So
frameworks are always changing.
They are, yeah. I mean, they've changed all the way through from ICF through to MLF, MPF, PPF, CVF as it is now, the current showing town. But this all seems like a bit of a, I don't know, it's aligned to these leadership levels, and I haven't seen all of it yet, so I'll kind of temper it. But it does all look like a big bolt, a big sideshow to the CVF. Because I say that, because I look at this article here, I'm reading it now, rereading it now as we speak. Strong leadership is required across all ranks. Well, you could have took that quote and put it in policing anywhere, couldn't you? Go back 50 years, go back 40 years, 30 years, you know, go back 70 years. Strong policing is required everywhere. It just seems like a... Policing must have high quality leaders at every rank and grade. It's a bit like, how many different ways can you say the same thing to fill up a word allowance in an article? And I mean that in a really supportive way, because these are my kind of secondary, not my first impressions. I have read this very quickly previously, but, you know, so as you say, that, you know, the Home Secretary said, in order to restore the public's confidence in policing. So there you go. There's the key message behind it, to restore the public's confidence in policing. I get that. So, you know, has leadership never been effective? Is there this implicit recognition that we've got it massively wrong and that everybody should get the amount of leadership training they need? And where's the money coming from? How is this going to, I'd be really surprised if this is going to come face-to-face or classroom-based.
Well, the college has about 17 million budget, according to their...
How much?
17 million.
17 million, okay.
Gross expenditure.
Okay.
Just checking the last annual report.
Okay, so while you're checking that, I'm just finishing up this quote that's in this article. I welcome, so Suella Braverman, Home Secretary, I welcome the College of Police's commitment to driving up performance, equipping all officers with the skills and behaviours needed to become effective leaders. Well, isn't that what the Competency and Values Framework is about? I know that the Competency and Values Framework is essentially around values-based leadership, values-based decision-making, values-based recruitment. But there's this retention in policing that's so I think recently it was Sir Mark Rowley said he's losing more people resigning than are joining at the moment in the Met, in the Metropolitan Police. So this kind of backdrop to the zeitgeist of policing doesn't bode well, really, I suppose. And I'm just looking at these leadership standards. They're talking about five stages of a new police leadership framework.
First piece of work they've done to this is identify five leadership standards which are published on the website, the five standards being aligned to five leadership levels, which they call foundation, first-line leader, mid-level leader, senior and executive leaders. So okay. what are your thoughts on those leadership, what do they call them, standards? Do you think they add value to the CVF, or are they adding confusion to the mix?
Well, I'd try and kind of go out wide first and look at this and go, what are they trying to achieve? Yeah, they're trying to restore public confidence. is there going to be a new promotion framework linked to the revamped code of ethics and stuff? The code of ethics is already linked to the competency and values framework. And again, I cover that in my digital toolkits. And it's one of the things that's made explicitly clear, you know, the foundation stone of the competency and values framework is linked to the code of ethics. It's where it comes from. And yet they're stating it will be linked to it. It's already linked. So that's one of the things. The other thing is I look at it from the perspective of some of my customers, or try and look at it from the perspective of someone going for promotion at the moment. And if you look at the CVF, you know, there's 18 pages of CVF guidance that people get given if they are aspiring promotion candidates. There are 6 competencies in there, split into 3 clusters. There's 4 values, or rather, that depends, because each force is now tweaking those and either adding their own values, bespoke values, to the 4 in the CVF, or changing them.
So there's local tailoring of the CVF, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, so whilst they should use the CVF, that's a broad brush approach. Yes, they should. Yes, they should be using competency-based processes. That looks very different. When I say completely, that looks very different sometimes in forces, and then it all changes again the next year. And I think that's probably how they hide it all, because it sometimes seems like it's hidden. You know, well, that's not the process we faced last year. No, well, we're trying something new this year. So you're very much a promotion guinea pig. So looking at it from, you've got 18 pages of CVF guidance with the CVF itself as the framework. So you've got those 6 competencies, 3 clusters, 4 main values. You've got 3 levels of it. Then you've got the code of ethics itself, which is 20 pages, 10 standards, 9 principles. You've now got 5 levels of leadership, which from looking at that there looks to me like
bullet points.
Yeah, it looks to me like bullet point bingo. It literally looks like, how am I ever going to get through all of that? So that's why I encourage candidates not to. By all means, have a look through them. Highlight anything with a highlighter pen that jumps out to you and slaps you in the face like a freshly caught kind of fish. What really does resonate with you? What really does strike you in there? Or is much of it much of what was there before, rehashed, rephrased, reworded, rechipped, recalibrated, refocused, to provide 5 more years for everybody to look forward to? Because it says on there, doesn't it, somewhere, that it will be reviewed and updated. There you go. It'll be reviewed and updated at regular intervals in partnership with the police service. So yes, it says here how the standards were developed. So this, I suppose, first draft of the first part of this new process that's on the horizon.
Yeah, they basically say they've developed them by using the Code of Ethics, CVF.
Okay, so they're informed by the Code of Ethics. Well, that already existed. As I say, it's already linked. So I'd be interested in what the key differences are there that are meaningful in terms of leaders moving forward. Because when I sit down with people in the Code of Ethics and say, as a promotion board might or might not do, how will you ensure the Code of Ethics, and how will you consider the Code of Ethics in your day-to-day work as a newly promoted leader? And it's quite clear that people haven't read them, don't know them, haven't absorbed them internally. And so how will this be any different unless it's explicitly assessed through a process, a new process? And that may be one of the new changes, linking the Code of Ethics more explicitly to the CVF and vice versa. And then, so it's informed by the Code of Ethics and the Competency and Values Framework, the professional policing profiles, which are another massive list of bullet points if you look into those. Right. Leadership research, well, that's interesting. I'm really interested in that. And national policing priorities. Well, of course, that's important because you wouldn't do it without those in line, or being in line or aligned to those anyway. So no great surprises in there, but my first look at this is my first impression, for what it's worth, as an observer who's kind of half an anorak on this, or I really do like to look at this. It just looks like a bit of a reinvention of some of exactly the same things. And if you look at the evolution of frameworks through policing, they are very much a kind of a rehash, but with a justification of why policing needs to change and why behaviours need to change, when it doesn't really matter what frameworks are in place and what behaviours are actually explicit, it does come back to this point of leadership at the appropriate level in the organisation, support for those leaders so that where they do come across those values that are not shared by officers in the organisation, and those officers don't deserve to be there any longer in policing or need to be removed from policing or perhaps need to be monitored more closely, that those leaders who are charged with that responsibility are fully supported by the leaders above them. Because that's, and it goes back to one of, it's an age old thing. Look back at Serpico. It's one of the things I've done on my YouTube video, a review of the book or the film, Serpico, with Al Pacino in it. And it just tells the story of police corruption, all the way to the top as a movie, if you like. But it comes back to the standards at the bottom of sergeants monitoring their teams. Yes, different time, different era, different country, different policing models. I get all that. But the standards, and that's what we're talking about here, is leadership standards, are around supporting people at the appropriate level in the organisation and, you know, helping everybody to behave properly in policing so that everybody can work in the right culture, if you like, to deliver the best service possible to members of the public who need the service perhaps more than ever.
I mean, it does say while they've used various sources of material to develop the standards and then publish them, like the Code of Ethics, CVF, professional profiles, and the like, maybe they're posing it as an executive summary of all that stuff, and you never know, it might form the next iteration of the CVF, because the CVF itself has 3 levels, but this has 5, so I wonder. I think it makes me wonder if there's whatever comes, is there going to replace the CVF with some other thing? How well, you could still have 3 levels. Maybe the new thing will have 5 levels.
Cynically, I mean, talking about all these levels that we've just been talking about, in each one, you know, 5 levels of this, 3 levels of the CVF, 10 levels of this, 10, you know, it just seems to me it's a bit like, what level are you on now on your promotion game or your promotion journey or your leadership development journey? It's almost like you could develop a little gaming thing for a remote and say, well, I'm on level 1, I'm on level 2, I've got through level 3, I've now got past the 9 principles of this.
Or Donkey Kong and the 9 barrels being thrown down.
Yeah, or Super Mario, that kind of thing. I think the thing is, coming back to, you know, a more serious kind of point is, as I said, it's a massive thing, leadership. And, you know, what do you want? So sometimes I look back to, it's sometimes helpful to take a historic perspective to, you know, what policing's all about. And I've written blogs on the Peelian principles because they are, you know, people say, are they still fit for purpose? Well, they're probably more fit for purpose than they've ever been today to come back to as a certainty. So one of the recent blogs I did was providing certainty or an anchor in a sea of change. Well, they've done that through, so they tried, tested through the storms of policing. No, they're not perfect, but they're as near to good as you can probably find. And so, yes, it's right to carry on with some of the conversations around those and how they underpin policing. But if you look back to the history of policing, which I encourage people to do, look, you know, where have you come from as a force? Where are you now? And where do you want to get to in the next 3-5 years? So that's the kind of point of focus for you as a newly promoted leader to be talking about. And if you look back through history, what do you actually want from policing? What's the expectations of police officers? You know, honesty, integrity, fairness, respect, transparency, impartiality. I mean, I could go on, and they're just lists on a piece of paper, unless they mean something to you. But they mean something to the public, and they mean something to people going for promotion, and they mean something to the board. So it's just about finding your way through those, what I call the rocks, if you like, with all the storms of the seas breaking on the rocks. When the seasons have gone past, when the years have gone past, when the decades have gone past, the rocks are still there. You know, they're still visible on calm days, and there they are. Integrity, honesty, fairness, respect. That's what people want from cops. That's what cops want from their supervisors and leaders. All the rest of it is kind of, you know, filling for the sandwich in between, but actually looking after yourself, your own development, driving it is really important as a leader, because you can't progress through policing or any other career or develop yourself as a leader without taking those kind of things and CPD seriously.
Yeah. Well, that was a good foray. We started on the training for new leaders once they're in post, particularly at that supervisor level, and then did a bit of a critique of the new College of Policing leadership levels. Is there anything else you want to add?
Not really. I think people can only listen to my dulcet, rummy tones and perhaps some of your interflections for a period of time. So we'll wrap this one up and we'll come back with something else.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this podcast conversation in relation to the topics Adrian's just summarised. And I will be back with another podcast in due course at Rank Success. Until then, take care and stay safe.